Welcome back to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White, in for Beth Ruyak. National Geographic's 2017 documentary, Water and Power, A California Heist, is about water, water rights, and what's grown where and how drought figures in. The film premiered at the Sundance Festival that year. In May 2017, Insight host Beth Ruyak spoke with filmmaker Marina Zenovich and the documentary's protagonist, attorney Adam Keats. They started the conversation with Keats describing what's at stake.
It's not about quantity. It's about distribution. It's about control. And the greater the amount of water that we have, the greater amount of water that these players, the captains of the industry, the major agribusiness industry that's controlling the water, the more they're going to take. So the issue is how we decide to distribute the resources that we have. The second part of it is that what we know in California is that we will have drought again. And then the question is, what will happen when the drought returns?
And just from the beginning to say, you're in this battle over private holdings of public lands.
I'd say it's private control over what should be a public resource. There is land above the resource, but the resource is this giant aquifer of water and all the water that's stored in the aquifer.
The distinction between land and water is important, also legal and illegal, because there is a lot of movement that happens between these players and among them that is legal because of the original agreements and amendments.
That's right. A lot of the arrangements that happen right now are technically legal under the way the rules and the way the contracts are written. It's our position that the contracts themselves are illegal, and we're trying to reverse the contracts. It's difficult for us to go after the transactions that are being made right now. What we can do is go after the framework in which they enable these transactions to happen. That's what we're doing.
We're somewhat talking around what the core of this is, but Marina, you told this story in dramatically different visuals. We see families with cases of bottled water in their living rooms and the shower heads that just have a trickle, and they're surrounded by lush green fields of almond trees, or in the Paso Robles area, grapevines with gorgeous trickles and running water through the fields and between the rows. What did you want people to know about the story of water in California?
Well, we just wanted to kind of show a world that people aren't really privy to. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles, a million miles away from Central California, where a lot of this is happening. We wanted to show partially the drought. We wanted to show the history of how the State Water Project was put together and focus on the Monterey Amendments and kind of how this public resource was essentially privatized.
With that, let's hear a little clip of the documentary. And just to put in perspective what, as Adam referenced, water has become in this state.
Water has become gold to be traded and sold, and we're extracting it in the same way. But it's not enough. The more water we need, the more water we will always need.
That phrase made me stop and think. The more we need, the more we'll always need. Adam, let's get to the specific of the Kern County Basin and Stuart and Linda Resnick. Will you explain who they are and the role they play in the California water system?
Sure. The Resnicks are a very well-known, politically influential, charitable couple from Beverly Hills. They're very smart capitalists. They have businesses in a whole bunch of different fields. They run Teleflora. They run Fiji Water. They run the Franklin Mint. Palm, wonderful. I mean, this is a very diversified, very large company owned by two people who are very good business people. They got into almonds and pistachios early by buying up degraded, poor soiled, poor watered land in the southern San Joaquin Valley. And they planted trees that they required a tremendous amount of water. And they went through their, I would say, political connections and their political and economic power to acquire that water and take that water from someplace else. And they've been watering their trees now for 20, 30 years and developing a massive almond and pistachio and other nut tree, you know, and citrus also, but tree farm permanent crop economy in a part of the state, a part of the world that can't sustainably support it.
So let's listen to another piece of the documentary, and it's self-explanatory.
The myth is that as the agribusinesses benefit, the communities benefit.
How's the water at the school? Do you guys drink the water at the school?
No. It tastes like blood.
It tastes like blood?
It tastes nasty.
It tastes like oxygen.
But in the case of the Resniks, even with their, you know, slideshow ready charity, no, you see that the Resniks, you know, jump up the Forbes list of billionaires and the workers can't even drink their tap water.
Marina, there is a sign that we see pretty early on in the documentary, and it says, is growing food wasting water? So that's the core question there. And really for state officials and the world is, this is a deeply productive, successful agricultural area that's feeding the state and the world. And yet there is this picture of parched families and parched lives in that part. Did you see that there was a place where there could be a better balance than what you visualized and depict in the documentary?
Well, hopefully this movie is going to get people talking about it to try to find a place, because I don't know about you, Adam, but I don't. Other than kind of less production of investment farming, I think there's a difference between big ag and small ag.
Adam, will you describe on what basis you are challenging, and by your own words in the film, water law in California is a nightmare?
To get in the details would require about a day and maybe actually a career to understanding what's happening with the law here. It's arcane and it's Byzantine. The very simple answer is that the contracts that were signed back in the 60s for the operation of the State Water Project required certain balances. And the Monterey Amendments that were negotiated in secret in 1995, 96, and then, you know, went into place in 97, upset that balance. And upsetting that balance was not just a strategic, you know, or economic decision. It actually was a political decision. And that political decision violated the Constitution and violated state laws. And we've been saying since 2010, when I got involved, and then other people since before that, we need to have a court address those constitutional and statutory violations of that deal.
At some point along the way, there was a tip from a Department of Water Resources employee pointing to the Kern Water Bank and giving someone direction. Did that come to you, Adam?
No, it went to the Planning and Conservation League. An employee, a former employee of DWR, was given some contracts to go through and realized what was happening, and she called PCL and got the ball rolling, and that's how the first lawsuit came about.
So time passes, and these agreements that were made and the amendments decades ago, do they just get quiet over time and it becomes business as usual?
Yes. I mean, and when I first filed this case in 2010, I think that there was a surprise that we even filed it to begin with. There was a surprise that there was someone new came along that actually had energy to keep battling. And one of the lawyers, one of my opposing counsel laughed and said, you know, your kids are going to be in college before this thing gets anywhere near concluding. The people that filed this back in the 90s, I mean, this is a struggle that's been going on since the late 90s. Lawyers have retired, you know, children have grown. I mean, this is, and there's no end in sight. I laughed at it in 2010. I said, you know, I move a little faster than some of these guys. I'm not in this for the career. I'm in this to get stuff done. And here I am, you know, 7 years later, and God knows when this is going to finish.
So back to this issue of what's legal and what's illegal, and maybe the better question is what's morally right and what isn't. Marina, what did you come away believing out of this?
Well, there's a great moment in the film when Tony Rossman, who's one of the lawyers from the original Monterey Amendment lawsuit, says, you know, someone advised me early in my career never to underestimate the power of greed. And that is what this is all about for me. I think with regards to this film, with regards to what's happening in this country right now, it's all about greed. How much is enough?
Yeah, great point.
So do I understand correctly that the only way the Monterey agreements would be able to be reversed is for judges to somehow be involved and see that there was a judicial role in all of this, Adam?
Yes. I think that this is our last hope of reversing it at this point, would be to have the judges recognize their duty and their role in stepping in and taking care of this. Absolutely. The law is there. And the facts are there. I mean, our case is very good. The problem is that there's been 20 years of operation and 20 years of cementing and hardening of this whole thing. And how do you get past that? That's the challenge.
What do you expect is going to happen in the Kern County area?
It's a dynamic case, and the case involves water in the ground. But long term, the new normal is the last 5 years, punctuated by brief, crazy storms that are going to throw everything into chaos. But we can't relax. We can't think that the the problem is solved.
To add just a bit of history, going back in time, we've always had this battle between North and South. More people live in the South, more water and snow and rain are in the North. So long ago, when there were just battles, when there couldn't be any agreements, and you depict that in the documentary, this solution with the Resniks somehow ended up being the compromise place. And that's where it emerged. It allowed people in that fight over water to reach an agreement, correct?
Yeah, that's true to the extent that you allow a battle between two players that are in a mutual agreement already. I mean, the public was cut out of that debate. The environment was cut out of the debate. The fishermen were cut out of the debate. The salmon industry. That debate was just between Los Angeles and Kern County. And they're both, you know, on one side of the debate when it comes down to it. That's the whole problem.
So is this situation playing out anywhere else in the United States?
Water privatization in general is a problem throughout the country.
Sure.
We saw at the end of the Big Short, this great scene where it's apocryphal now. You know, what's the next big thing? It's going to be water.
He says water.
Right.
Yeah, buy water.
There is definitely an agenda to commodify water and to make it into something that can be bought and sold in the marketplace. And that is my group's struggle, is to stop that from happening. The Kern Water Bank is one of the largest and most visible efforts in that
fight.
Battle, in that fight. Yeah, thank you. Exactly. However you want to call it.
That was Beth Ruyek in conversation with filmmaker Marina Zenovich and attorney Adam Keats. They were talking about National Geographic's 2017 documentary, Water and Power, A California Heist. You can hear more of our favorite segments at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.